Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St. Albans and from further afield. Oh my goodness, isn't it cold and dark now that the clocks have gone back? And if you're like me, you've put your heating on, but there's still bits of your house that never really feel warm. Well, the good news is that there's help on hand. With low temperatures outside, now is the best time to use a thermal imaging camera. Oh, you've not got one? No problem. There's a local scheme to enable you to borrow one. I spoke to Caroline Penn to find out more. Caroline, thank you very much indeed for joining me here. So what does a thermal imaging camera do?
Hello, yes. Well, it's a camera that shows you a colour picture, but instead of the objects being their true colours, hotter objects are yellow and colder objects are blue, and other objects are in between those colours. They may be magenta or red. And it shows you where heat is leaking from your home. If you take the camera, the camera's a bit like about the size of a hairdryer. And you can use it inside or outside your home, point it at areas of your home to find out where the heat is leaking from your home or where there's cold air coming into your home, drafts.
Okay.
And it's also been used to detect water leaks.
Okay, I suppose, yes, that the water could be warmer or colder than the surrounding area.
Yes.
So, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's an excellent idea as well. So you said that the thermal imaging camera can show us where air is leaking in out of our house or whatever. I mean, does it show us anything that we kind of weren't aware of already? You know, I can feel the draft coming in through the letterbox.
Yes, I think it does, because it's more sensitive than just what you can feel, what you can probably suspect there's a draft coming from a particular corner of the window or something, or letterbox, but the camera will show you, really pinpoint exactly where it's coming from.
Right.
And also, in some cases, you won't realise there might be cold areas of a wall that you haven't realised.
Okay, so just really tells us things that we otherwise couldn't discover.
Yes, in some cases, yes,
it does. I'm kind of thinking that round here, round St. Albans, you know, there's lots of these Victorian terraces, aren't there? And, you know, they've got solid walls and sash windows.
Yes.
If you've got a house like that, I mean, really, is there any point, or are they just simply beyond hope?
Well, there's a lot you can do taking simple measures. A lot of people who've borrowed the camera just comment on how they hadn't realised just how much heat was leaking out of their windows when they didn't have the curtains drawn at night.
Oh.
Or blinds down. Those
right.
Those sort of things will make a difference.
So not even, you know, your DIY things. It can be something as simple as the difference between drawing your curtains or perhaps something in one of those sausage dogs under the bottom of the door.
Yes, draft excluders under the door. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, you may not be able to, go to much expense with insulation and so forth, unless you're actually planning to do something to your house. But you can take simple measures like using draft excluder strips and the things you can fit over the letterbox to help with drafts. In a lot of cases, just putting some reflector behind a radiator will be effective, particularly in older houses which are not cavity wall houses.
Yeah.
You can actually see patches on the outside of the house where the heat is leaking through
the
brickwork.
From the radiator going through the wall.
Yes.
You can actually see that.
Yes.
Wow, that is amazing, isn't it? You really are just heating the outside then, aren't you? That is, well, incredible. And I suppose also it probably does show, you know, if you are thinking about the bigger projects, does show you the big areas to go for, doesn't it?
Yes, obviously things like insulating your loft area and your windows.
Yes.
Would be the places that are going to make the real difference.
Yes. Yeah. So a great way of looking to see where the work still needs to be done then.
Yes, and also Some people have borrowed the camera again afterwards to just check that everything's all the measures that they've taken have actually been effective.
Yes.
We've had, you know, one or two cases where people have had surprises that they've looked at their loft hatch, for example, to see if it was needed draft exclude around it, and realised that actually is a patch in the ceiling itself that was showing that there was no insulation in that particular patch. It had just been left out.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. So it sounds like as a result of using the cameras, people have been able to take all sorts of easy steps which have helped them keep the houses warm, save money and help the environment as well.
Yes, and it does really make you think when you go around the house looking at some of the appliances that are on standby and seeing how warm they are. Realise that, you know, if you can take measures to switch things off when you're not using them.
Yes.
I ought to mention, actually, that at the library, main library in St Albans, there's there are devices that St Albans district residents can borrow to look at to see what energy they're using from appliances.
Yes, you're right, they do. Of course, that would be something else to do if you were thinking of tightening up energy use in your home. But going back to the thermal imaging cameras then, so are they easy to use?
It's pretty easy to use. You need a bit of training, first of all. So we need people to sign up for a training session, which is just an hour in an evening. We run about two, maybe four sessions a month in St Albans and in Harpenden as well.
Yeah.
Once you've done the training session, then we found that most people have found that they found it easy to use, yes.
Excellent.
There is a certain amount you need to understand when you're using it, that when you look at things, it doesn't always indicate exactly the temperature that it's reading on the instrument.
Right.
So there's a bit of learning to do.
And presumably these are quite expensive pieces of kit.
They are, yes.
Do we have to pay to use the thermal imaging cameras?
No, the training sessions are free and you can borrow the cameras for free because they have been... Transition St Albans applied for them with localities budget grants and we're very grateful to... County councillors Theresa Heritage and Jeff Churchyard, Robert Prowse and Sandy Walkington for the grants to buy these two cameras for the residents in the district to use.
Brilliant.
And we do have to insure them though, and sometimes we run sessions in places where we need to, we have extra expenses. So all donations would be appreciated.
Of course, indeed. Okay, so it sounds like a great scheme. It sounds like we've got a lot to gain from this. How do we find out more?
You go onto the website.
I'll make sure that's quite a long one, isn't it? So I'll make sure that the details of that go onto the blog on the Radio Rowland website. But basically, it's if you go to the thermal imaging page of the Transition St Albans website.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we hope lots of people are able to warm up their houses with the use of the thermal imaging cameras this winter. Caroline, thank you very much indeed for joining.
It's a great resource. So we'd like as many people as possible to have the opportunity to borrow it.
Jolly good. Excellent. Well, by coming here and talking on Radio Verum, hopefully lots more people will be able to do so. Caroline, thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you, Amanda.
And I was talking there to Caroline Penn. And as I said, you can find information about the thermal imaging camera scheme on the Radio Verulam website if you look out for my blog there. Now, apple crumble is lovely, but if you've got an apple tree by now, it doesn't get the whoops of delight it did 8 weeks ago. And if you've had a particularly good crop, like many of us had, the grumbling may well have and truly have set in. Or perhaps your apples are eating apples and you've saved them carefully, but the apples sat in your garage for a while and now they're just a bit, soggy. Well, not great. But then there, you don't want to see all that local organic fruit going to waste. Who would do? Now in Kimpton, they have found a solution. Kimpton apple juice. Davina Malcolm of Kimpton Environment Group explained. Davina, thank you very much for coming in to talk to me. Now, what was the inspiration for Kimpton Apple Juice?
We had an outing in 2008 to visit Codicut Community Orchards, and we were so impressed that we wanted to have a Kimpton Community Orchard.
Right, OK. So you say community orchard, so this is an actual orchard, or this is sort of distributed throughout other people's gardens?
Well, we wanted an orchard like Codicut had.
Yes.
And we asked the parish council, and they thought it was a brilliant idea, and then we, with the parish council, we went to look to see what spaces there were.
Yeah.
And they decided it wasn't there wasn't a suitable space.
Yes.
But we could make better use of the apple trees on Village Green that are already there. Pretty old trees.
Okay, then. So how does the apple juice work then? Explain the sort of process that you go through to get the apple juice.
So initially we just started collecting the apples on the green. We invited people to come and pick with us on one weekend.
Yeah.
And then we had people coming to pick and people coming to complain that we were going to take all the apples. In fact, you can't possibly in one day clear an apple, a good apple tree.
No,
there's plenty there.
Yes.
And we took those to be pressed at Shenley Park Trust,
yes,
which is another community orchard.
Yep.
And we then asked people in the village if they had more spare apples, because we had a village day that year in 2008. And we actually pressed them more juice there,
yes,
and then, and gave people tasters.
So yes.
They liked it. And we thought, right, this is great, but we don't want to be hand pressing again because that's a lot of work. And so we decided we'll just ask people for their apples.
Right.
We did want to form a cooperative. It started off, everyone who gave could get bottles back.
Right.
But that was just too complicated because some people have lots of trees and some people have few, and some people volunteer to pick and don't have trees. So what we have done is we have communal picking, and then we ask if anyone's got spare apples, they'll bring them to us,
right,
or we will go and pick them.
Okay, so it's a sort of a bit of a mix and match then. You can help out people who need apples picking off trees, or they can pick their own apples, and this, you know, effectively I suppose Kimpton has become one big orchard for juice then, hasn't it, with the juice coming from all sorts of different apples. So once you've picked all these apples, where do you take them now?
Well, we now go to Apple Cottage Cider, a commercial company in Baldock, who make cider normally, but they do pressing for communities as well. And it's Gail and Paul, and Paul's family come from Kimpton, so it's very much still a Kimpton organisation.
Oh, that's rather nice, isn't
it's
it?
Lovely.
Yeah.
We thought about making cider, but you're then into licensing and everything else, so we've stuck to apple juice.
Yes. So the apple juice is nice and simple. It uses lots of apples, doesn't it? But as you say, none of the other... And also, I suppose, it preserves the apples too, which is what you really need, isn't it, when you've got a big glut of apples. So how many bottles of apples do you usually get?
Well, we started off at 40, and we're now up to 400.
400?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it? Now, I'm just thinking, it must cost quite a lot of money to press all these apples. Who pays the upfront cost for this?
Well, up till now, I've done it, but now Kimpton environmentalists have got enough surplus that they can fund it, because we don't get the money back for nearly a year.
Yes.
Because it comes in dribs and drabs as we sell bottles.
Okay.
And our big sale is on Kimpton May Festival weekend.
Right, which is, you know,
May.
A good, that's right, that's a long way through the year, isn't it, to be in deficit. So the group sort of takes the hit. And does it sort of break even? Do you make any money out of it generally?
Yes. There is the cost of the bottles, of transporting them to and from Baldock. We pay volunteer drivers, but we pay the petrol money to and from. And the from is bringing back the crates of apple juice.
Yeah.
We label the crate. We label each bottle,
yes,
carefully by hand. And so it all takes some time to recoup the money. But we've gone from around £40 to around £200 in the 9 years we've been doing this.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a reasonable profit, but it's not massive. And let's face it, all these people, they could just leave their apples on the floor. Why do you think they go to the bother? Why do they join in with this scheme?
I think they, now they've seen it, they don't like the apples to be wasted. They're not going to do it themselves, because the commercial presses need at least enough apples to make 100 bottles at a time. So most people haven't got that in their garden. A few people have. But they're quite happy with the two bottles we give each contributor.
Right.
They get their two bottles. They're happy. They feel the apples are going to a good cause and are not being wasted.
Right.
And they are now more alert to the fact they've got all these apple trees and they ought to be making use of the apples.
Right. So that's sort of like a win-win thing then, isn't it? And I suppose the other thing, now you've sort of organised this over the past few years and things. Is it an awful lot of work?
It's one weekend or maybe 4 days of work.
Right.
And it's trying to decide when that should be. Because you have to coordinate the people who've got apple trees and they all fruit at different times. And people are phoning up saying, my apples are dropping, what shall I do?
Yes.
With getting your pickers, your person with the transport, and the press. Because they've got other people coming in with their apples. And our apples are kept separate.
Okay, so sort of a concentrated period of quite hard work, a bit of coordination, but then once that's done?
You just need space for storing lots of crates of apples.
Right.
So. And then I stick on labels, a friend comes in and we spend an evening sticking on the labels as we need them, rather than doing the whole lot in one go.
But I presume you think that this is a good, worthwhile thing to do?
It's fun. When you see the people collecting, that's even more fun. We've had people aged from 8 to 80 climbing trees. We try to discourage that and try to do it with long-handled pickers. But there's always someone who wants to have a go, and that makes it fun.
It sounds like a fantastic community project. And I suppose the other important question, is Kimpton apple juice the most delicious apple juice in the world?
Of course it is, yes.
I suspected you might say that. Davina, thank you very much for telling us about this lovely project. And I am hoping that somebody in St. Albans decides that they want to copy you. A little hint there. Okay. Thanks, Davina.
Thank you.
I was talking there to the lovely Davina Malcolm. That's all for this week. Looking forward to talking to you next week. Bye-bye.